Welcome to Nonprofit Showcase, and here we are at 97.9 WCHL, and in the showcase today is Ginger Young, who is the founder and executive director of Book Harvest. Welcome, Ginger. We're happy to have you.
Thank you, Fred. I'm so glad to be here.
You know, I suspect there are a lot of people who know something about your organization, but they're going to learn a lot more today.
And super.
Our goal, of course, is to not only tell about the organization, but also to tell people what they might be able to do to help. And we'll get to that in our last segment. But you founded this organization. Tell us the story about what motivated you.
The story of what became Book Harvest began when I was 8 years old. I was having a Norman Rockwell childhood. Everything was really awesome and wonderful. And yet, even in a world where I had a great family, plenty of food on the table, there were still times that the days were really hard because growing up is hard. And so I well remember those nights when I was about 8 and was having some tough times with some other kids at school, when I would sneak a flashlight into my bed and I would grab my much beloved copy of Harriet the Spy, which I still have, and I would read long after my bedtime.
And that was your escape.
That was my comfort, my solace, my escape, my source of confidence, and my sense that the world was going to be okay. And that ability to dream, to imagine a reality different than your own, to go places where you aren't, is something I want for every child. So it got me through what was otherwise a fantastic childhood, but my best friend was books. My best friend was always books growing up. So fast forward to when I had my own kids. I have 3 children.
Now let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Did you pick the books that you read, or
always
did your parents?
I picked everything.
Okay.
I was always driven to the library when I requested it, and I was always allowed to take out as many books as I wanted, which meant that I would take out the maximum, which in Atlanta, Georgia, was 20 books every week or 2 weeks. And so I was a book fiend. When I had my own kids, no big surprise, I imposed the same thing on them. They got taken to the library, the Chapel Hill Public Library, every week.
And they could take out more books.
40 books per child per week, or for every 3 weeks, for every cycle. And we got to know all the children's librarians at the Chapel Hill Public Library by first name. We went to the story times. My kids knew when they were a little bit older that if we were driving past a bookstore, all they had to do was ask about a book, and I would turn in, and we would go buy that book, even if we needed the money for something else. And so I raised my own kids with the same kind of foundational belief that reading and books are just an essential part of a healthy childhood. And so when my kids got older, when my youngest child became a teenager and they didn't need me quite as much as they did earlier, I began really, really thinking about that reality that my kids grew up in and that I grew up in, and being very troubled by the fact that a half a mile from us was a community where there were kids who had no books at all.
No books at all.
No books. And I knew this firsthand, and I thought to myself back in 2010, 2011, this is a problem which is elegantly simple to address. It is so easy to imagine that I can take 500 books off of the shelves that we have at home. These books haven't worn out. They've got plenty of life left in them. They're books that my own kids have already crowdsourced for content. They love these books, and we know that they're going to resonate with other kids. All I need to do is figure out a way to get them into the hands and homes of other kids in our community who weren't as fortunate as my kids to grow up in a book-rich environment. So it began in 2011 with me telling a few friends that I was going to take all these books and find a way to get them into the homes of kids who needed them. And before I knew it, my friends were stepping up with bags and bags of books that their kids had. So this whole idea, this very simple idea that every child deserves to grow up in a home that is rich with books, is something that from day one, it was like wildfire. Mm. And I never intended to drop everything in my life and start a nonprofit, but it's the best thing I've ever done aside from raising my own children
and
having my own family.
A lot of joy and satisfaction.
Enormous. And the further I get into it and the deeper I go in terms of looking at the research, the more I'm convinced that with this stark, horrible reality that 2/3 of kids in poverty have no books at home, the more I'm also convinced that we have this incredible opportunity in our society to fix a problem that will have lifelong benefits and can change the landscape of our community and of our country.
How did you identify the kids to distribute the books to?
Well, it was, you know, sometimes it's really good to know that you don't know what you're doing and just give it a try. So I have this in my mind is this simple headline of, I sound like I'm an advertisement for Nike, it's just do it.
Just do it.
And so by the time after 2 weeks of sharing this idea with friends, I had 6,000 books in my garage. Didn't plan for that. had promised.
And these all came from homes that probably hadn't given much thought about, what am I going to do with all these books the kids no longer
the thing
read?
The thing I said to my friends was, any book you donate to me, I promise will end up in the hands and home of a child in need. It will be owned by that child, and that child will have the same opportunity to build a home library that your kids had and my kids had. So I had to make good on that promise, and that was daunting, but it worked. I went, first of all, in February of 2011, when I had this growing mountain of books in my garage, I went and visited the Interfaith Council for Social Service in Carrboro.
Okay.
I asked them if they would give me a 3-foot-wide slot of space in their waiting room to put in a bookshelf that I was happy to go buy and provide to them, and that if I could just come every week and stock it with books and put a bookshelf on top that said kids, free books.
Because and you could take the book when you left the lobby.
My idea was one that still endures today, which is that anybody who comes upon one of our bookshelves can take as many books as they want. We're not talking about a book here and a book there. We're talking about wanting every child in our community to grow up with a mountain of books by their side.
I'm sure you have duplicates of many of the most popular ones.
We have everything. And so
Goodnight
Moon, Freight Train, The Very Hungry Caterpillar, all the classics, and a bunch of new books that I've gotten to know thanks to this work that weren't
characters
around when my kids were growing up. You know, Diary of Wimpy Kid is...
that's the advantage of being a grandparent.
That's
you
right.
You get to read the old ones and the new ones.
You get to know where the classics are and identify the new stuff. And so after the IFC, of course, I wanted to make sure that with any nonprofit I went to that was basically connecting to kids in need in our community, that I made it a no-brainer for them. All I was asking for was a little swath of space. I was going to bring everything they needed, and I was going to run the operation myself so that we weren't asking them to provide time or resources, simply a little bit of space. It's like when you have a new product in the grocery store and you need that sort of shelf space to justify that you're doing this. So it was very homespun at first. I put together the bookshelves with my husband. Their bookshelves were, you know, cheap bookshelves that I bought off the shelf at some big box store. I got laminated signs that said kids free books in English and Spanish. I put those up above the shelves. I went to Carrboro Community Health Center. I went to a lot of other locations that serve low-income kids. And I started enlisting friends to be the people who stocked those shelves so I could grow the site.
So they were your distributors.
And some of them are still our distributors today. So fast forward, we now have 50 different locations around Durham and Orange counties mostly that host a bookshelf with a sign on it that says kids free books. And each of those locations has a volunteer liaison assigned to it who comes to our office every week, picks up the right number of books for that site, stocks the shelf, and then leaves again. A week later, they do the same thing. They arrive to find an empty shelf. They restock it. The books are flowing out to kids in our community all over the place in what we call book deserts.
Well, let me stop you right there because
sure.
We're going to have to take a break. This is Nonprofit Showcase with your host, Fred Black, and 97.9 FM WCHL. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Nonprofit Showcase, and this is your host, Fred Black, with the founder and executive director of Book Harvest, Ginger Young. And Ginger, you were just explaining how you had all this help to get these books out. But tell us a little bit about the programs that you're now able to implement.
So we've come a long way since those initial days in 2011 when we simply wanted to get books out into the community and into kids' homes. About that same time, I began really digging into the research around early childhood and literacy. And what I found presented, again, another opportunity for us to really architect some programs that put the books that were being donated to us to their highest and best use. So what we now have is a continuum of programs that start at birth and go all the way through high school for children. So I'm very proud to say that we have two core programs that address the age from birth to about age 10, so through the elementary years.
Mm-hmm.
The first of those programs is called Book Babies. And again, like everything we do, it's very simple. When a child is born, this is only running in Durham right now, though we certainly hope to expand it. A child is born who's Medicaid eligible. We get a referral for that child to possibly, if we have room, to be enrolled in our program, Book Babies, at which point we visit them every 6 months. We make a home visit, and we bring 10 age-appropriate books, whether they're 6 months old or 3 years old. They get the right books for their age and language-appropriate books. And we do a literacy coaching home visit. So the family is being enlisted as their children's first and best teacher, as their literacy advocate, as their best ally in helping prevent some of the challenges that low-income kids face around being school-ready when they turn 5.
Mm-hmm.
The work to make sure that children are school-ready starts at birth.
And the research shows the direct connection between having that foundation and success in preschool and kindergarten.
All the way through. So we already know that it's very sobering, actually, that the first 3 years of life are when 80% of the brain develops. If we miss that early window, we're going to have to play catch up really hard, and even then it's going to be very difficult to ever get back on track. So we can't afford to ignore those first 18 months, those first 3 years, those first 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it turns out, we know from a lot of research, that having books in the home is the single biggest predictor of academic success, even when you control for everything else from zip code, parents' education, parents' race, you name it. And so if we can do this simple thing of getting books into the home of kids from birth, we can potentially change outcomes for a whole community, certainly for individual children. And so our oldest book babies are now 3 years old. They're three-fifths of the way toward kindergarten. By the time they get to kindergarten, we'll see what their kindergarten readiness
looks like.
So
what's the next level then?
So after Book Babies comes our Books on Break program, which we have a lot of support from in the Chapel of Carborough system, Stroud Roses, Youth Forward, a lot of other friends and supporters have invested in this program. Books on Break is very simple too. We basically have identified that we need to address summer with enrichments because 80% of the income-based achievement gap takes place in the summer. So if you don't address summer and its need for enrichments among kids who have limited enrichments, you're kind of wasting a bunch of your time. You've got to address that to make everything else work. So Books on Break sends us into the schools with a ton of books, beautiful books, our best books. We spread them out all over the library shelves and the tabletops in elementary schools that are participating. We give every child a string backpack and ask them to fill it with any 10 books they choose. They take those books home at the start of summer, and they're theirs to keep forever.
Forever.
Forever. And so children who have participated in this program for 3 years or more have a home library of 30 books. The thing about this, which I especially love, there's two things. One is that when we always go back to the same school so we can build on our success from the year before and help these kids stay enriched. Every year when we go back into the schools in mid-year to start planning for it, we hear the kids whispering things like, there's the book lady, or here come the book people. You're going to be back again, right? And they've come to expect this as the normal part of going home for summer.
What other kind of feedback do you get from kids and parents?
Oh, I have about 180 thank you notes, which are sitting on my shelf. I brought some today to leave with you, Fred, because I want you to see them. But the feedback from the kids is remarkable. They often talk about how they read to their brothers and sisters. And in many cases, we were kind of humbled at first when the first year we did this to realize that when a third grade boy was over in the section picking out kindergarten books, it was because he was looking out for his younger siblings at home and he wanted to take books home for his younger siblings and be able to read those special books to his brothers and sisters. The multiplier effect of Books on Break is huge.
Well, that's really great, though, that not mm-hmm. just thinking about himself or herself. But
so many instances of selfless children who are, you know, they only have 10 books to choose, and they're using up some of those precious 10 books on the kids they care about and on their families.
And I would suspect there's some swapping that goes on, too, after the fact.
So there's these pop-up book clubs on the spot at Books on Break. If anybody ever wants to come observe it, find me in May or June, and I will bring you along to see it, where a boy will be at a table picking up a book that's Dork Diaries or Wimpy Kid saying, you guys got to read this. It's the best book I ever read. What that child says to his peers is more powerful than anything I can say to them.
You can't
and it
pay
works.
For that.
It goes viral. The energy in the room is, it's unbelievable. Sometimes people say to me, kids don't really like to read these days. And I always say to them, let me have an hour of your time and I will completely flatten that logic. Mm-hmm. You're wrong.
Because I remember growing up and saying, oh, this is the best book I ever read until the next one became the best book.
And that enthusiasm will stay with you for the rest of your life if you have it injected at the right age.
And we had to write those book reports, too. And if you had to write one, you might as well write on something you read and like. You
know? Right. Exactly.
I don't know if they have to do that much anymore.
There's some of that. But what we try to keep high in this experience of Books on Break is the joy factor. So mm-hmm. we're not asking kids to keep book logs. We're not asking them to report back to us on what they did with the books. We want them to experience it and own the whole process.
And what do parents tell you about this?
Parents, the last time we did a survey with them last year, we're still compiling our results from this year. It was like, you know, 98% had nothing but positives to say about it. There were a few little suggestions about improving the quality of the books, which is exactly right. We want a more diverse and robust set of books for kids to choose from because we want kids to see themselves in the books. But for the overwhelming majority of the parents, they want more. They want it again. They have said to us how much this makes a difference in their kids' summers and in their children's abilities to go back to school in the fall, ready to pick up where they left off the prior spring.
And the teachers have to be big fans, too.
Huge.
I guess that would only
it helps
natural
them.
That they see the growth over the summer that they wouldn't have seen otherwise.
And then if that is missing, many teachers find that they can't even get to new material in the classroom until November. So think about how hard that must be for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's just not what we want. It's totally unnecessary. Some of these simple enrichments for $30 a child per summer, we can completely set alive their summer and get them in the right place for complete academic success all year long.
And so the book clubs give an opportunity for the young kids to come together and talk about what they've read.
There are so many opportunities for them to share their experiences and to refer each other to the right books and to swap, as you say. And in many cases, the same kids who are selecting books for us are now also donating books back to us. So it's come full circle. Mm-hmm. And that's really the civic engagement model that's so powerful behind Book Harvest. Every single person, whether you're 3 years old or 90 years old, whether you're a parent, a child, someone who's never really been involved in anything volunteer before, there's a place for everybody at the table.
And I remember, too, growing up, that lesson about how you respect adults and how you respect books.
Yes.
And the way you treat a book and making it last.
The enthusiasm and the joy and the sense of how much it makes possible in sparking imaginations and creativity.
Well, believe it or not, we're going to have to take another break. And we'll be right back with a nonprofit showcase featuring the Book Harvest Executive Director and Founder, Ginger Young. Welcome back to Nonprofit Showcase, and this is your host, Fred Black, and it's 97.9 FM WCHL, and we're talking to Executive Director and Founder, Ginger Young of Book Harvest. Ginger, you're talking about these programs, and we all know in the nonprofit world, you just can't do this out of thin air.
Nope.
So how do you go about getting the resources and assistance to make all of this work?
Everything we do is done in partnership with a huge variety of people of all ages. So we have three ways that our beautiful mission of Books for All Children is supported in our community. One is with volunteers, and I cannot say enough about how much they ignite our work every single day. We have volunteer opportunities that go from sorting the books that come in once a month for an hour to much deeper dives like stocking those bookshelves I mentioned earlier.
All
every
around
week,
the town.
All so. Year round. To intensive work around our MLK Day Giant Dream Big Book Drive, which is a once a year, the biggest book drive you'll ever see in our community, brings in thousands and thousands of books in one afternoon on MLK Day, to volunteering on committees to help raise the funds, to doing social media, you name it. There's a place for anybody who wants to volunteer with us. And we do a monthly volunteer orientation to make sure that people always know enough about what we do to determine if it's a good fit for them. The second, obviously, is book donations. We are nothing without our book donations.
And anybody who has a book can give an age-appropriate
book. If you've
got
a children's book sitting at home that you don't need, we would love to have it. We have received we've received so many book donations from generous souls since we started. We will give away our 500,000th book sometime this fall.
Say that again.
We will give away our 500,000th book sometime this fall.
That's a half million.
Half a million. And we are just getting started. So if people have books at home that they don't need, we have 14 sites around the community where books can be dropped anytime. Places like Flyleaf Books and Twig in Chapel Hill, the children's store in Chapel mm-hmm. Hill. They keep book bins for us that are open 24/7 if they're open or if they're, you know, available. And we have liaisons who pick up those books and bring them to us every week. So there's a great groundswell of support for collecting book donations.
Do you take money also?
We need and love money. It keeps the lights on. It keeps our hardworking staff paid. It keeps our volunteers supported. So, yes, we also need financial donations.
So
and we do a lot with.
The webpage has a donate link?
The webpage has a donate link, which we encourage everybody to visit, and you'll be glad you invested in this
cause.
And
what's that page?
It's www.bookharvestnc.org.
There are other Book Harvests, I take it.
There's one website that doesn't go anywhere that we're hoping to get at some point. But for now, we're NC, and we.
So say that address again.
Sure. It's www.bookharvestnc.org. And on there, you'll find a donate button. You'll find a page about how to donate books, a page about how to volunteer, and a page if you're a parent who needs books for your children. There's information about where you can go to get books off of these wonderful bookshelves that we run throughout the community.
So you're helping people who might need to know where to
absolutely.
Go.
There's a lot of information on our site for whatever perspective you're coming from.
And you can leave comments and requests for
absolutely.
Assistance and that kind of thing
yes.
right on the website. And you have
yes.
a board of directors, and I know they must be hardworking.
We have a very hardworking 13-member board of directors who are my sustenance every week. I'm meeting with them constantly to try and dream big about where we're going with this because we want to make it possible for us to be able to say, in just a few years, every child in our community has a home library. It's an essential part of a healthy childhood for every child to grow up with books.
Well, no one can argue that, and I admire what you're doing. And most listeners know that I'm on the Stroud Roses Foundation, and we have given you grants before for that great program. So thank you, Ginger, for being with us today, and go back and tell all your volunteers how appreciative we are of what they do to make a difference in this community. And this is Nonprofit Showcase with your host, Fred Black, 97.9 FM WCHL. Keep doing all that you can do to help.